Welcome and breathe in air. Abstract Illusions Radio, the show that explores and exposes the many aspects of expression, with your host, Jennifer Hellman. Good evening, everyone. This is Jennifer Hellman, and thank you for listening to Air Tonight. Tonight is one of those wonderful guests that really helped me out, especially last year when I was in a really kind of funk. Her positive affirmation for wealth changed the way I think, and to this day, I'm still doing them. And after I did the 21-day affirmations as she recommends. One of the intentions that I put out there was to have this wonderful woman on my show. So with that, I thank Peggy McCall for all of her wonderful work. She is one of these ladies that helps you understand and realize the success that is possible through her books. Her first real success was Your Destiny Switch. Masters your key emotions and attract the life of your dreams. She also has several other books. Her website, destinies.com, is filled to the brim with lots of information and lots of articles to help you be the very best and to have that dream life. So without further ado, and there's so much we're going to cover, especially her new book, which is Virtual Explosions, I would like to thank and welcome Peggy McCall onto this call.
Thanks, Jennifer. It's great to be here with you.
So I would like people to know a little bit about your story and how things progressed for you. How did you really realize what was... Well, what made you write the book, Your Destiny Switch? Let's go back that far, which is a little bit ways back, but...
That's a great place to start. Actually released Your Destiny Switch just 3 short years ago, and so I wrote it approximately 5 years ago. It takes a little while before it's out into the public. But I wrote that book after I had been applying the principles that I wrote about in Your Destiny Switch, which is following the understanding that our emotions are playing a key role in what's showing up in our lives. And, you know, I realized from about a 2.5-decade study of personal development that if I looked back at what I had created or what I had destroyed in my own life and what I was feeling prior to that period of time, and even as I was going through that period of time, there were certain emotions that were prevalent. For example, you know, if there were experiences I had in my life where either I had lost my job, or you know, I was in a really bad relationship, or things were really not working out for me, I had been all consumed in the emotion of fear. And fear, of course, is a destructive emotion. And, you know, other things that would be going on, if I was feeling and expressing anger, as an example, and I had been expressing anger quite a bit, you know, because I was really upset about the childhood that I had, and I harbored this anger. It's almost like, you know, you put a lid on something and you expect that it's going to go away. Well, it doesn't. And so, you know, just really looking back at my own experiences, what I had been through, and saying, you know what, this is pretty obvious to me that there's certain emotions that impact your life in a very positive way, and there's certain emotions that impact your life in a very negative way. And it's almost like a dimmer switch on the wall that goes up and down. And if we can just choose to focus on specific emotions, emotions that are relevant to whatever it is that we want to create in our life and what our own belief systems are, our own challenges are, then we can use switching strategies, we can be focused on illuminating the positive emotions, and we will experience, over a period of time, the positive results from that. So throughout my journey of self-discovery and really implementing all the principles that I was learning, I started to experience very positive results. And it's kind of like my mentor taught me many years ago. Bob Proctor had said, no amount of reading, going to seminars, reading the books, buying the books, or listening to audio programs is going to bring you anything. Like, it's not going to do a thing for you. It's when you understand it, which is another level, and you apply it, which is one of the most important levels, then you're going to start to realize the transformation and the change. And because I had created these, I'll call them systems, of switching my emotions when I'd find them slipping down the scale, of using techniques to really illuminate positive emotions, I decided that I wanted to share it with other people. I was teaching it in seminars, and I found that when you get a book out there into the world, it just helps you share your message with a much wider audience. And so that's how the whole concept of Your Destiny Switch was born, and that's how the book came to be.
So would you mind showing one of those systems to help switch the perspective?
Sure. Well, I have a three-step process for switching. And the first step is to become aware, like really notice what your emotions are. What are you feeling? So if you're feeling anger towards something, and like sometimes people are feeling angry, but they're not really aware that they're feeling angry, or they're not giving it any conscious attention. So first step is just to become consciously aware. Holy smokes, like I'm really feeling this anger. And then, which is a very quick, I mean, that's an instantaneous snap your fingers and like just become aware of the emotion you're feeling. And then decide is the second step. Decide you're going to change it. Because if you're feeling that emotion of anger, it's not helping you. It's hurting you. It's actually a very destructive emotion. So make the decision in that moment you're going to change it. You know, Woody Allen had a great quote that goes like this, 80% of success is just showing up. And you know what? I'll just sort of paraphrase that. I think 80% of success is also making decisions. You know, making decisions you're going to do something about it because it's such an important and big step. And the third step is to switch. And that's where you just decide, you know, that you actually follow through on a technique. So a technique for, let's say, anger as an example. If you're angry at someone, you could say, ask yourself the question, well, what else could it mean? You know, like, let's say you were upset because of something someone did. And you could ask yourself the question, well, what else could that mean? You know, maybe they weren't, you know, trying to hurt me at all. You know, maybe they're upset. Maybe they feel fear inside. And answer it in a way that's positive. So it gives you another perspective on it and can, you know, change the way you're feeling. Another question to ask yourself is, let's say you're angry about a situation. Then just say, well, what can I learn from this situation? Or what's great about, you know, the experience? And so questions, asking positive questions that lead to positive response, questions is a technique of changing how you're feeling in a moment, like in a very short period of time. That's one of them.
And it's a very easy one and a quick one that makes a huge difference, especially the awareness these days, the way the energy is, people's feelings that I'm finding through my work are really being amplified and really making sure that you do feel them. It's kind of hard to deny some of the things that are going on around you. So with the process of switching emotions, it really does make a huge change. Now, was it a really quick change for you, or was it something very gradual that you said, hey, this is really working? When you started,
yeah, I think we'd all like quick, rapid change, you know, like the overnight, transformation. But no, it didn't work that way. You know what? I think one of the great gifts that we have as human beings is that we're habitual beings. And, you know, it's a great gift, but it's also a curse, you know, because if we're habitually used to doing certain things, then we're going to be challenged to switch to new patterns of behavior, new patterns of thought, new patterns of feeling. Even our feelings are habitual. And you'll notice that. Like if you ever see anybody who's constantly depressed or constantly upset, it's like, you know, if you know someone who's like that and you see them walking down the road, you can pretty well guarantee that they're going to be, you know, in one of their moods. But yet one day you see them and they're like in a really happy mood. It's like, whoa, hey, what's going on for you? And because it's so unusual, it's such an unusual experience. And so in my life, you know, if you knew me, Jennifer, when I was 19 years of age, and I'm now 51, but if you knew me when I was 19, you would not even recognize me today. Because when I was 19, I was miserable. Like, I remember my parents used to say to me, oh, you're so miserable. And of course, I didn't help. It was like, you know, throwing some fuel on the fire, right? Just reinforcing, you know, what was the truth. I mean, it really was. So I was miserable, insecure, angry, feeling unworthy. So I couldn't look in a mirror. Like, you know, nowadays you walk by a store. Let's say you're walking past the store and you're out the outside and you happen to see your reflection. You know, now you might look at it and check your hair or whatever, or smile. But then, if I saw my reflection, I'd turn away, like instantly. I didn't want to see myself. And it was like my head was down, you know, my eyes were down. And I would, you know, be dressing sloppily. You know, my finances, even at 19, were already a mess. You know, I realized this thing called credit cards, and I had already acquired about 5 of them and ran them up. And so I was really, really an unhappy person. And so when I was 19, I met Bob Proctor. And Bob Proctor said these words that forever changed my life. He said, you cannot escape from a prison unless you know you're in one. And I realized that I was in an emotional prison, one that I created. No one else held the key, and I wasn't locked away, but it felt like that, and it felt very dark and lonely and bleak. So I realized that, okay, if I just, you know, become aware of I am in this emotional prison, and I'm the one that holds the key, I'm going to do something about it. But it definitely took time. It took it's almost like reprogramming, not just your brain, but your entire body, because of the, you know, we tend to respond or react in certain ways as well. When somebody does something to you, you're like, snap at them, where, you know, if you just ask yourself a different question or think about it a little bit differently, you might not respond that way. Like, quite often, anyone who's angry, like really, really filled with anger, and you say something to them, it doesn't matter how you say it, what the tonality is, or whether you meant well or not, they'll probably snap at you. They're just miserable people. And so, you know, really to answer your question, Jennifer, it's a process. You know, it does take time. I think we'd all like to have this transformational experience immediate, but you know what it really involves? I think it involves true commitment, like daily commitment. We are growing beings. We're either getting better or we're getting worse. We're growing or we're dying. We are evolving beings, and nothing stays the same. It's like this morning I went looking for something in my office, and I found this little laminated index card that I received in the 90s when I was at one of Tony Robbins' events, and it was empowering morning questions and empowering evening questions. And I remember getting the card, and I used to have it at my bathroom sink. And, of course, you're getting ready in the morning, and you're getting ready at night before you go to bed. So I would ask myself these empowering questions. The reason why the card was put away was because it just became a habit that I would do it. But I didn't put the card away because I was no longer doing it. It's just I didn't need to see the reminder in front of me. But if we're not used to doing certain things, create the reminders. And that's what 21 Distinctions of Wealth is. Create the reminders so that they're in front of you, so that you're reinforcing new beliefs that can become a part of who you are.
And it makes a difference. You were mentioning telling somebody, you know, telling them that, you know, you're being really negative and them snapping back. I actually had that happen to me, and I said, that's your perspective. If that's the way you want to be, that's fine, but I'm just letting you know you have an option. And she really was quite upset at me for me just saying, you're in a negative state and you need to change your perspective of how you're looking at things. She felt very attacked by me just saying that. So it really is a very fine line, because you want to open them up, but if they're not in the state of mind to open up and truly change, they're really not ready to, and you can't really force it. So do you have any words of wisdom of kind of opening her up to better possibilities than the slump she's in?
Well, I think that's an absolutely great question, and I think it really helps people with conflict issues, no matter who it is, whether it's, you know, with another woman, a woman, or a relationship, or friends, or siblings or parents and child. So what happens is that if someone is acting out, you know, no matter what's going on in their life, the way that we receive it, interpret it, is quite often based on how we're feeling. I remember one time hearing the expression that if you allow an abuser to abuse you, you're being abusive. And I remember hearing that and shaking my head going, what? If you allow an abuser to abuse you, you're being abusive. So I wanted to really understand that a little bit more. And so what they were saying is that if someone's being rude to you or treating you poorly and you let them, that's actually being abusive because you're giving it energy. You know, you're sort of fueling it. And so I can understand that. Now, if you attack back and you're abusive back, well, that doesn't help either. That's a form of what they call psychological reciprocity, which, you know, doesn't work. So I think there's a number of different ways you can handle it. One is that if you feel attacked, you could say to them something like, and really from a place of indifference, isn't that interesting that you would see it that way? So you're validating, okay, I understand that that's the way you feel, or I understand that's the way you see it, but what if you looked at it this way? And you did it in a very loving way, you know, give them another perspective and not where they would feel attacked, but just, isn't that interesting? Because as soon as you get two people in the room, if one of the individuals is stronger in their emotion and the strength of their emotion is the negativity, like the, you know, like they want to attack, right. They will win over if you let them. But if someone, you know, approaches you or attacks you and they're in that negative space, but you respond with love, you respond with not fueling or giving energy to the negativity, their emotion will immediately be, it's like water's thrown on the fire. It's dampened. And if your emotion is love, it will always take over. And so there's a 5-word question that I suggest that people ask themselves before they react to someone who's hostile. And that is the following, and this is something I learned from Neil Donald Walsh. He suggested that you ask yourself the question, what would love do now? What would love do now? So, and this works really well in parent-child relationship, like when our parents really angry at the child and they just want to, you know, they're just ready to explode or blow, you know. Just ask yourself, what would love do now? And respond that way. Once you know the answer to that question, then respond that way. If you don't know the answer to that question, if you're now all bent out of shape and your emotions are all gone awry, then leave the room. Step away for a minute until you can get a hold of yourself, right? Compose yourself. And then, you know, when you're ready in a very loving way, then come back and perhaps continue the conversation. I mean, there are some individuals that are so, the expression bent comes to my mind, you know, so bent, like hell bent on, you know, wanting you to believe in their beliefs, that they will just get angrier and angrier if you're not jumping on board, especially if you're being calm. So sometimes the situations where it definitely makes sense to just say, you know, at this time I really feel like I need to remove myself from the situation, you know, it's just not getting anywhere. You know, the person's just like so convinced that they want to get their message across and have you agree with them. And if you're not willing to agree with them, which you don't have to, of course, then I would remove myself from the room.
And that's wonderful advice, or even making sure you at least count to 10 before you kind of gather yourself.
That's another one. Yeah, count to 10 or bite your tongue, like literally bite your tongue. Before you say anything, if you're not going to say anything loving, just bite your tongue until you're ready to say something. That's loving.
So with all the things that you have really put out there, I mean, you have a phenomenal programs that are going on. Right now, is there any classes that you're really doing right now?
My courses are done over periods throughout the year. So right now I'm just wrapping up a program for authors, and that will be finished in approximately a week. But I'm just about to launch something. It's a brand new program, and it's really based on the principles of viral explosions, and it's a course called Online to Riches. And it's a six-month program. It'll be on my site, destinies.com, within the next week, but it's not there yet. And if you're a newsletter subscriber, you can sign up for my newsletter at the front of destinies.com. You will be notified. If you're on my email list, you will be notified when I launch this program. But it's something I've been working on for years, and because it's so intensive, it's going to be spread out over a six-month period where I'm going to work with people on creating a profitable revenue-producing business online. Whether they have an idea or they don't. If they don't have an idea, that's fine because I'm going to give them a whole bunch of them.
Awesome. So let's get to the how viral explosion came about. I mean, you did really a phenomenal thing. You went on and did a teleconference. You got a lot of partners, and it was extremely successful. So what is this concept of viral explosion?
Yeah, it's not easy to say, is it?
No.
Viral explosions really is what I've been doing for the last decade. I started marketing on the internet just under 10 years ago. I wrote my first book, and I had previously worked in the high-tech industry, not in a technology capacity because I'm not a technical person. I was actually vice president of corporate development for a dot-com company, and as vice president of corporate development, I developed the people in the organization. But my background has included sales, marketing, and training, you know, throughout the years. And it's always been in technology, and I love technology. My personal passion has been in the self-help industry. And so when I decided to write my first book, and I had produced, I self-published this book, I decided to blend technology with self-help and market my book using the internet. Because at the time, I was a single mom. I'm married now to my wonderful second husband, Denny, and at the time, I was a single mom. And so as a single mom, I had a home and my son, and I had Michelle in a private French school. And, of course, I had a really nice lifestyle. You know, prior to writing my book, I had worked in technology, as I said, and was a vice president, so I was used to making really good money. And then when the company went under, it became a dot bomb, I was unemployed. So I wrote my book, and I didn't work for about a year and a half without any income. So here I was, not making any money, wanted to be a stay-at-home mom and be available for my son, but still building my career and building my brand. So I thought, well, how can I do that? How can I create a profitable business while I'm at home and still being available and staying true to my number one commitment, which is my son? And I decided to market on the internet. So I created this launch campaign for my book, and I got partners on board to help support me, and I created a special offer for the buyers, and I used the internet. And my very first campaign, I promoted my first book. I now have 7 books, and I sold books right off my own website, and buyers came from 26 countries in the world. Like, they were on my website buying my book. I was shipping out books to all my countries all over the world. And so that experience made me realize a couple things. Number one, people are hungry for this information. And two, the borders are down. The borders are really down. It doesn't matter that I live in a little town just outside of Ottawa, Ontario, in Canada. We can sell or market our products or deliver great value using the internet no matter where we are in the world. So if people are hungry, how can we serve them? How can we offer other things that are of greater value? So after my first book went out into the marketplace, I started to get emails from readers. And they would send me emails and they'd say, what else do you have? And I was thinking to myself, what else do I have? Well, read the book and apply it. Like, what else do you need? And they'd say, well, you know, we want courses. And are you coming to our city? And I thought, no, I'm not going to be traveling all over the place, but I can create a course and deliver it online. So I created an e-course called The 8 Proven Secrets to Smart Success. And I started to market that on the internet and deliver it on the internet. And people from all over the world were signing up for that course. And so that led into another book, into services, into products. And so it's just things have evolved for me, and my online business has just expanded and exploded. And so a viral explosion is really using the power of the internet to reach people anywhere, anytime, with the support of others that spread your message. But it's really initiated by an individual who usually has a well-thought-out plan. Now, we see different things that go viral, like videos. You know, when you see a video of, you know, something a little bizarre or odd or interesting or intriguing or funny, you know, we see videos like that that just spread throughout the world. You know, those when Susan Boyle had auditioned on Britain's Got Talent, it ended up going on to YouTube, and that spread. You know, all of a sudden millions of people are seeing Susan Boyle. She became like an overnight success. And how was that? Well, obviously she went on Britain's Got Talent. That was a big step. But with the power of the internet and having this video spread from person to person to person to person, that became a viral explosion. But from my perspective of viral explosions, I like to teach people how to expand their business, their brand, and generate revenue. Expand their revenue as well, create profitable revenue so that they are, you know, delivering great value in the marketplace, and they're being rewarded for it.
So with that, you know, and I highly recommend it, and I'm definitely going to be looking at your course because most likely I will be doing it. I'm just wondering, how do you come up with the original campaign? I mean, was it just a spark, you know, of inspiration? I know you said, I got to do it on the internet because it fit really your lifestyle that you were looking for. But the campaign, how did you find the partners? How did you figure out the gifts? How do you know how many gifts to offer? Because can't people be overwhelmed if you give them too much?
Sure. Sure, they can be overwhelmed with too much. Too much is better than not enough, though. And that's a great question. So what I did was I, first of all, modeled success. And I think it's important to find those that have blazed the trail before us, and you can learn from them and expand on it and improve it. But it's kind of like a formula that we really need to understand. How is it all executed? I had heard about a couple authors that had sold 5,000 copies of their book in a day. I had self-published 3,000 books that were sitting in my dining room. So I thought, well, if they sold 5,000, I only have to sell 3,000. So I researched what was it that they did. And I wasn't really well connected online. I didn't have a lot of friends that had big email lists. So what I did was I set a date for my launch. And this was in July time frame that particular year. And I actually gave myself 3 weeks to prepare. Now that I know what I know, that's not a lot of time. At the time, I didn't know what I didn't know. So it probably seemed like plenty of time. And I was able, of course, to work on it full time. So I decided, it was like the first week in July, I'm going to do a campaign on the 25th of July. And so I made a list of who could be a potential partner. And who's a partner? Well, a partner is somebody who's going to send out my email to their list. The next question that typically pops into people's mind is, why would they do that? Well, there's a number of reasons why they would do that. One reason, which may seem overly simple or simplified, is that somebody's going to do it because you asked and they want to help you. Like, you can connect with another author, and authors really understand each other. So if you connect with me and you say, hey, Peggy, I've written this book, and, you know, I think it would really resonate with your readers, and, you know, something that really connects us together. It's not just a matter of assumption that you're going to assume that somebody who's also an author is going to connect with you. That's not the way it works. It's not an arrogant type of approach. It really is a well-thought-out approach. So I did a little research. Okay, which newsletters was I already subscriber to? Because I was into self-help. So which ones was I a subscriber to? So I made a list of those. Well, who else do I know that's in the industry? Added those to the list. Then I did some searching with my search engine, you know, Google. I don't even know if Google was available then. But anyways, I did some searching. Self-help newsletters, personal development e-zines, you know, just keywords, and looked to see what else was out there. I'd go to sites. I would study their site. I would sign up for their newsletter, so I became familiar with the type of content they were sending out and the style. I would look at who was behind the site, meaning the About Us page. You know, there's always a human being behind every site. So I did my homework. And then when I went to approach someone, I sent a personalized email every time. It wasn't like a big blanket email that goes out to, you know, hundreds of people. Hey, potential partners. It wasn't anything like that. I see people doing that today, and it just, you know, makes me wonder how they expect to get positive results. So if I was sending you an email, I'd say, hey, Jennifer, I'd use your name. I'd probably reference your site. I would get straight to the point. I'd talk to you about how you're going to benefit, why you would even want to help me. And then I'd say, you know, here's what I want you to do. I'd give a very specific call to action. The call to action is what I want you to do. Well, I want you to respond and say, yes, I'm on board to support your campaign. And all you have to do is hit reply and say, yeah, I'll help you. That's all I need to know. And so this is what I did. So very, very early stages, first step, set the date. Second step, do some research. Three, reach out to the partners one by one by one with a very personalized style. Now, the bonus gifts, what I did initially and what I do now is very different. Initially, I just put together some of my own bonus gifts. I took some of the materials from some of the courses that I had been delivering. I had some templates for goal achievement that I had created. I had an audio product that I was selling, so I made it available as a download. And so I just put together approximately 7 downloadable bonus gifts. Nowadays, like when I launched Viral Explosion, I had about 100 and some odd, I think 183 different offerings, different bonus gifts. So, you know, is there too many? You know, probably, you know, it's too many. But here's what I do is anytime you're doing a promotion, you have to anticipate the questions that your prospects are going to have. So if someone comes to take a look at your special offer page and they're seeing that you have 183 bonus gifts, they're probably going to say, like, what in the world? Why does she have so many bonus gifts? And do I have to take them all? Can I only choose a few? So what I suggest is answer the questions in your copy. So I would say, you know, you're going to find there are a lot of bonus gifts available for you. You don't have to take them all. Just take a look, you know, look through it, scan through, see which ones are most appealing. If you want, you can take them all. But if you don't, just select the ones that are most appealing to you, and you can download those. But all that's required to get them or access to all of them is to invest in one copy of my book. That's it, like less than $20, and you get all this. And it's this one heck of a deal, and it's time limited. It's available now. It's not going to be here, you know, next week or next month. Now's the time. If you're interested in the book and you'd love to get all these extra goodies, so now's the time to go and buy it. And so those are really the sort of high-level steps that are involved. And, of course, from your end, you need to make sure your website's ready, the copy's up, the shopping cart's working, or the links are all working, and so that it's a seamless experience for your prospects. You don't want something not working, and then you have all these people screaming on the day of your campaign because they're so upset. So the testing needs to be done. The preparation needs to be done. You have to make sure it's working beautifully before you hit your launch button.
Yes. One of the bonuses I would think in asking your partner and even asking for a gift in exchange is it's more exposure for them as well. Correct?
Yeah, absolutely. It is. Like now that, you know, with the way that it's done for someone else to get a bonus gift in your campaign, I get requests all the time to be in different campaigns, of course, you know, and I mean, it's hard to create new bonuses every week, but I've got a number of bonus gifts that I give away, and I just rotate them.
So is there any kind of bonuses that you look at and say, I'm not including that?
Yeah, I think that's you're asking all great questions. I'm glad you asked that one, because I remember one time I was working on a campaign and somebody offered a bonus gift. And it was something along the line of, you know, how to have happy relationships or something like that. So what I suggest is check out the bonus gift. So I opened up the document, you know, to see it was a downloadable ebook. So I decided to take a look at it. So I open it up and I'm just sort of flipping through the pages online. And it was borderline porn. Like, seriously. It was inappropriate. It was, in their opinion, they didn't find it to be inappropriate. But it's something that you got to understand that you don't know who's going to get access to this, and you definitely don't want to have something that's got a ton of nudity in it. So I declined that bonus gift. Now, in the number of years that I've been doing this, it's the only time that I've ever declined a bonus gift. But you have to be careful. You know, if anything that's going to be any bonus gift that's going to be in your campaign, you have to understand it is a reflection of you. So if somebody puts some horrible bonus gift, maybe has foul words in it and nudity and, you know, just inappropriate stuff, that's a reflection of you. So I definitely take a look at the bonus gifts.
And with that, I mean, do you ever request certain types of bonus gifts?
Like, yeah, you know what? That's what I like to do is it's important to make sure your campaign is unique and attractive. So, for example, when I was launching my book called Be a Dog with a Bone, I wanted to make sure that I had bonus gifts that were attractive for the buyers of that book. So what I did was I had a lot of people that were supporting that launch. So rather than have their regular bonus gifts that, you know, they probably have been given away in many other campaigns, I created these little audio downloads where I interviewed every one of them and I asked them the question, how has being persistent, which is what Be a Dog with a Bone is all about, how has being persistent made a positive difference in your life and your career or both? And what role has persistence played? And then I just let the person go. I mean, they would answer the question. And they were short interviews. I call them little vignettes, little audio vignettes. And so I recorded and had all of these little audio recordings created, and they were the bonuses for my campaign. And there were other bonuses as well. But what that did was it gave some fresh bonuses that people wouldn't have received anywhere else. And it was definitely tied to the, you know, there were beneficial bonus gifts, and it was tied to the whole theme of the campaign. The book was called On Being the Creator of Your Destiny, or pardon me, no, it was called On Being, or Be a Dog with a Bone. And so it fit. And when I launched 21 Distinctions of Wealth, I did the same thing. I made sure I had, you know, wealth-related bonus gifts. They were my bonus gifts. And so I included those, you know, I created a little video, I had some downloads, I had the checklist from the 21 Distinctions of Wealth. And so those items became, you know, special bonus gifts that people could only get when they purchased a copy of 21 Distinctions of Wealth.
Now, after the campaign, do you make those bonus gifts available or do you keep them for the future? Or if later on somebody buys that book, do they get those bonuses in addition to the book if they get it through your website?
It really depends on if the sales page is left up. Like typically when you have a book promotion like that, the sales page, with the link to the sales page is usually acquired from an email that's been sent out. So it's not like a very visible page, you know, something that anyone mm-hmm. can get to anytime they want. So if someone has bookmarked that landing page, that special offer page, and they go there later on down the road, sure, they could get the bonus gifts. Like right now, Viral Explosions, all the bonus gifts from that campaign is still up at viralexplosions.com. I launched the one thing. Now, the one thing was a little different. I did prizes for that particular campaign. But my sales page is still up at onething.com, and it's W-O-N. So those are still up there, but 21 Distinctions of Wealth, that page is gone. Your Destiny Switch, that page is gone. Because Hay House actually had created the pages for that book. Be a Dog with a Bone, that promotion's no longer up. So, but if someone went to viralexplosions.com, I believe they can still access most of the bonus gifts.
So, why did you decide to do prizes versus bonuses, or did you do both?
You know what? In that particular case, for the one thing launch, I did just prizes. I wanted to try something different. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't advise it, though, because a lot of people wanted the bonus gifts. So I received emails from folks saying, where are the bonus gifts? Like, what's going on? And so I realized that even though prizes was a very unique approach, people still want the bonus gifts. So and a prize is basically where only one person wins the particular item. And it's usually things that are more valuable and are being shipped out. So I would suggest that you could have prizes, yes, but I would also suggest that you have bonus gifts as the primary giveaway. It's much easier too, much easier to manage.
I would say so, because once you get that launch page up, and most of them are downloads these days, much easier. It takes care of itself as long as that page is available. You don't have to worry about it. Is there anything else that you would recommend to the author about their book? About actually, do you have any clues on actually writing the book? I mean, like getting over writer's block or really keeping the passion going with the book?
Yes, yes. Number one, write about something you're passionate about, because if you're not, you'll probably will give up. And if you've lost the passion, maybe you should evaluate why you have. And ways to get over writer's block is to, it's almost like force yourself to write, or get up earlier in the morning, get up at 5 a.m. and then sit in front of your computer and just start to write something. Even if nothing's flowing, just start to write something, even if it's garbage. Once you start to write, the flow will begin. It's almost like a dam breaks and opens up, and away you go. You start to write. And another thing that authors really need to know and remember is that no one will care more about their book than they do. And so, like, sometimes I'll meet authors who are expecting that a publisher is going to do everything for them, and that's not usually the case. The publisher looking for the author that's going to do everything for the book. And if you've got an expectation that the publisher is going to, you know, take care of everything for you and do all the promotion, that's not likely going to happen. And if you are looking to get a publisher or get an agent, they're looking for two things. They're looking for an author that is willing to promote the book, knows how to promote the book, and can do a great job at it. So that's one thing. And the other thing they're looking for is a great book idea. You know, and I've seen lots of authors put together a book on a subject that's totally saturated, and they have nothing unique that they're bringing to the table. And quite often the uniqueness that you bring to the table is your own story or your own experience. Even when I wrote Your Destiny Switch, what was unique about Your Destiny Switch? Well, number one, my story was unique. Two, I'd never seen anything like it with this whole scale of human emotions, which is what I created and delivered. And it really got into the how, you know, the methods for really implementing the ideas in the book. Because I found that throughout the years that I was studying personal development, I would find some great work, you know, great material, and I'd be reading it and nodding my head going, yeah, 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 this is great. Okay, I get it. I understand. But I'd have this question that didn't seem to get answered very effectively, and that was, how? Okay, I get that you're supposed to do these things, but tell me how. And so I was really frustrated, you know, by studying all these books, because I like to put things down in very, you know, simple steps. And if it wasn't sort of laid out for me, I would either dissect it myself and create my own method, or I'd be, you know, just constantly looking for it, looking for the next book, looking for the next thing, looking for the next program, looking for the next audio program, listening to them, until I got to a point, it's like, Your Destiny Switch is going to be a book where people won't be asking the question how, because they're going to get the how, they're going to get the answers. So with authors, you've got to realize that when you're writing the book, it is a one-to-one relationship. That it's like a dialogue that you're having with one other person. Now, the hope is that your book is a one-to-millions relationship.
Yes.
At the end of the day, you know, it's one person that's reading the book. And you have to write it that way. And you have to write it in logical flow. Like, if I was to sit down with you now and you wanted to understand the whole, you know, concept of Your Destiny Switch, and, of course, if you and I had the conversation about Your Destiny Switch and I actually read to you the book, it would take a few hours to do so. So I have to imagine, okay, Jennifer's in front of me, and she probably wants to know, well, where did the idea come from? What's my own experience? What's my own journey? And what is the scale of human emotions, and what does that mean? What are the empowering emotions? What are the destructive emotions? How can I switch? What are strategies to switch? What can I do to illuminate the powers that are within me? How do I deal with difficult people? How do I deal with difficult situations? How do I get over obstacles? And so what you're really doing is you're anticipating a communication between another, one other, and you're writing it in a way that has a logical flow so that it makes sense to your reader. And I've heard authors that have written books in weekends. I wrote my first book in a month. Most of the time that I've done a book, I've written it within a very short period of time. I'm working on a book right now. I got an email yesterday from someone saying, when are you going to be done? I said, I'll probably be done by the end of the weekend because I'm flying this weekend and I'll be on a plane for 10 hours. So I can write. I'm captive. there's nowhere to go. So I'll be able to write while I'm on the plane.
Wherever you're, do you ever find yourself more inspired? I mean, this kind of goes back with the writer's block, but do you feel that sometimes there's a subject that really just, you hear a question or something from someone else and you go, wow, that's something I really need to really investigate for myself, and end up writing an article or a book or really getting into it more? Do you ever get that inspiration from just a conversation?
Absolutely. That's how my book, Be a Dog with a Bone, came to be. I launched my very first book, which is called On Being the Creator of Your Destiny. It's at a print right now. And I did a book launch event at the Crown Plaza Hotel in Ottawa, Ontario. And I was doing the launch, and I was talking. I did a little speaking thing at my book launch party. And I said to the audience, I said, you know what? I really should have called this book, instead of On Being the Creator of Your Destiny, should have been called On Being a Dog with a Bone. Because, when I was young, I had a dog. Her name was Peppy. And she would get a hold of a bone, and you try and take it away from her, and she wasn't letting go. And you could drag her around the room until her teeth were ready to fall out, I suppose. And she would not let go of that bone. And I had realized that as an author, you got to grab a hold of your dream. So the bone is like a dream. And don't let other people take it away from you. Don't drop it. Hold on tight. And you can make it. Now, don't bite anyone or growl at anyone. I'm not talking about doing things like that. So, I was talking about this whole concept of how persistence is critical to success, and especially as an author. And a little later that evening, someone said to me, you have to write that book. And I said, what book? And they said, about being a dog with a bone. I said, I was kidding. And she said, no, you have to write that book. And that's how that idea came to be.
And it's a great book. There's so many things that do you recommend an author go to, like, book conferences, really find out more about marketing? Because it really is, like, 85-90% of the whole process. I mean, I have one book of poems that I've written, it's published, it's out there, and I dropped the ball. And it really was a great learning experience for me for self-publishing and understanding the whole process. But I knew I hadn't really completed the whole process just because I dropped the ball when it came to marketing. So time gives you lessons to learn. But do you recommend people really understand the best way to market a book online, really take the initiative to really understand every part of publishing? Because right now, as you said, publishers are really looking for that really special book to really take hold. Otherwise, you're pretty much on your own.
I would only suggest that an author learn about marketing if they want to sell some books.
That's
like
a good way of putting it.
You know, 95% of the job is marketing. 5% is completing the book. I remember hearing that many years ago and thinking, are you kidding me? But it's true. It's absolutely true. 5% of the job, and it's a big job to do a book, as you know. But 95% is marketing. So do I recommend people take courses or go to programs or go to live events where they learn how to market a book? Absolutely. Absolutely. Because it can change your life in so many positive ways. And, of course, you're going to learn a lot, but the relationships you're going to also make from just being in the room, from the people that you make, like take advantage of the opportunity to meet other authors, especially if you're going to do a campaign. I mean, you and I met at a conference, and I remember being on stage and saying, just take a look around the room. We've got 350 people here. You could do a campaign with just the people that are in this room. You don't even have to go any further. We have 122 million people. 122 million websites online. We got 2 billion people that are online today. So there's an endless amount of potential partners. So nobody could ever tell me there's not enough people out there to help you. That's just baloney. That's a cop-out. That's an excuse. So I would suggest, yes, You know, definitely learn everything you can about marketing. And if you want to do it from the comfort of your home, to learn how to do it on the internet.
It definitely, there's so many wonderful resources on the internet. And at that conference that we did meet, they really were saying that the Facebooks, the Twitter, and YouTubes are the places really to focus, because those are where a lot of people are going. So with that, do you feel like, how often should you be updating those? How much of the book do you give away? Do you just give teasers, or do you really just give them everything and see what happens?
Well, I think it needs to be well thought out, and I certainly wouldn't give my books away online, but I give knowledge away. You know, I have a blog. There's a lot of stuff that comes from my blog, and a lot of it is in the book. And so I believe that we constantly need to be giving stuff of value to the world, because it builds our brand, and it creates a connection between you and another, and it helps people get a good feel for what your level of knowledge is, you know, whether you really are an expert or not, and whether they'd want to work with you. So it helps build business is what it does. So we're so exposed now with the internet. So I think it's, you know, definitely beneficial. It can create some challenges too. I don't think we need to go on Facebook and Twitter and tell everybody everything we're doing. I think it's gone a little bit crazy in some regards. And I noticed, you know, people have sort of lost perspective on how to have a nice meal with a friend, because you go into a restaurant, you see people with their iPhones or their Blackberries out, and they're sitting across the table from someone and they're not even talking to them, because they have their face in an iPhone and a Blackberry. And so I think people really need to be cautious of the balance that they should maintain in their life. And if they don't have it, create some. But still, you know, create the great presence online. You know, think your strategies out in advance before you actually take action. And you can ask yourself some questions like, does this make sense that I share this with others? Would this be a value to others? Is it going to help my business, enhance my business, you know, create a greater connections and strengthen relationships that I already have? Those types of questions are, like, in my opinion, no-brainers. But ask yourself the questions and, you know, you'll get some really good answers.
Okay.
To what you need to do.
Yes. And we only have a couple more minutes left, but this is something that I think a lot of authors are afraid of. Actually, a couple things. The ways that they sabotage themselves from because of the fear of success and the fear of failure. Any suggestions on ways to get over that?
Well, number one, you really do need to notice, you know, what are your limiting beliefs? You know, what is it that you're feeling inside? You know, I had a client the other day, you know, she's actually local, so she was in my office, and she said to me, she says, I really feel guilty invoicing people for my services. And I said, that's great. You know, it's great that you recognize that. It's not great that you have it, but it's great that you recognize it and you're willing to share it. I think it shows strength that you're saying, okay, I need to deal with this. And I said, yeah, because that's hurting your business. If you're feeling guilty, if you're feeling an emotion that's not pouring, you need to look at that. Why are you feeling guilty? Don't you believe in yourself? Are you not believing in your value? Do you believe that you don't deserve to get paid? What is that? Where's that coming from? What's the underlying belief beneath that, below that? And so, you know, if you have beliefs like that, you know, that you don't deserve to be successful, that it's not available for you, that you need to be technical, any of these beliefs, if you have them and you can answer the question, this is not helping my business, then I would suggest you create some new beliefs. You got to let those go. You got to suspend disbelief, and you've got to reconnect or connect. And sometimes it is a matter of, you know, acting out in spite of fear. We had a couple come over for dinner last night, and the wife, she's an author, and, of course, she wanted to pick my brain. And she was saying to me, you know, well, what do I need to do? And I said, well, you're sitting back in fear. And she said, what do you mean? I said, you're afraid to try anything. I can see it. You know, I could see it in her. And she said, yeah, you're right. And I said, you know what? Sometimes we have to step forward into growth. Even though, you know, we might feel it's safe to be back here, step forward into growth. Take some steps. Make some connections, even if these are people you don't know. Make the request, even though you feel you're shy. You know, I sometimes tell people I'm shy, which I am, and they're like, you shy? Well, I am. Like, by nature, Don't throw me into a big cocktail party with a bunch of people. I'd rather just turn around and go home. So I think you've got to really, really pay attention to what your beliefs are, what are the limiting beliefs, become aware of them, and make a conscious choice to change them, to switch them.
And with just wrapping this up, any final words to the listeners on anything? The floor is yours.
Okay, great. What I would suggest to anyone that's listening is to realize that, you know, it is really important to make an investment in yourself. You know, listening to this, you know, this interview as an example is an investment of your time. It's an investment in yourself. But really where, you know, the magic begins is when you start to apply the principles, where you take some action and you do something. So I want to encourage people that are listening, if you have a desire to, you know, get out there, you know, build your business, maybe write a book, you know, make some money online or whatever, then take some action. You know, believe in yourself, and even if you don't have that belief, pretend like you do and get out there and make it happen. Learn from some folks that have actually created great success. There's a lot of stuff available online, a lot of stuff available inexpensively. A book, like $20, and you can learn so much in a book. So really make the investment and then take action.
And with that, Peggy McCall, I thank you very much for all that you're doing for other people. You're awesome. You are a great, great speaker and really a good mentor for anybody who knows of you and reads your work. So I do thank you very much for being on the show and being who you are. And I highly recommend everybody check out her website, which is Destinies, DESTINIES.com. And with that, I thank you very much, Peggy, once again. This is Jennifer Hellman saying, with each breath of air, gain new insights and information. Till next time, many blessings and good night.